Okay, we're joined in studio now by Sarah Timoney, founder and owner of Adapta Fashion. Thank you so much for calling in.
Hi, guys. Thanks very much for having me in.
It's good to have you with us. All right, Adapta Fashion, firstly, great name.
Thank you.
Cracker. Talk to us a little bit about it. It's about adaptive clothing range for people with additional needs. So talk us through what those... You know, how you meet those needs with your fashion brand?
Yeah, so basically Adapta Fashion is an adaptive and inclusive brand. So basically we provide clothing with adaptions that would cater for elderly care or people with disabilities. And the whole aim is that everybody can have the choice to dress how they want and promote independence as much as possible, because with the choices that is currently available, there's a massive gap in the market for adaptive clothing. It's very hard to find, and when you do find it, it doesn't really look very fashionable. So that was a big part of it, to keep it fashionable and functional.
Yeah, and that's right too. A lot of clothing that would be beneficial to someone in terms of convenience or what have you, depending on their individual circumstances, there's probably not a lot of attention going into making that seem nice.
Yeah. So I think a lot of bigger companies, especially in America, and like a lot, you know, bigger brands would have started adaptive clothing. But the problem is, like, a lot of brands would just, you know, put a bit of Velcro on or stick a zip here and there, and it doesn't really work. So with all of our designs, we would have had a lot of focus groups, and they would have been designed by people with disabilities to make sure that we are actually meeting the needs and that, you know, it is serving the purpose that they need.
You've been in healthcare for over 10 years, so you've seen this firsthand yourself. So talk us through, you know, some of the experiences that sort of led you to say, right, I can do something here.
So I've seen it year on year, to be honest, Greg, and I think the demand is actually getting higher because, you know, as we know, the population is living longer and there's more people living independently, and I've just seen a bigger need for it, and it's ranging from kids right up to people in their late 80s and 90s. And I just think it's such a simple concept of, you know, that they can still get dressed independently. It's just having things tweaked and added to make sure that's a bit easier. So the likes of shirts, we would replace buttons with either Velcro or snappers. We also have a magnetic range. So all the items look, I suppose, exactly the same as everyone else's, but they do have that function that they can, you know, it's just an easier way of getting dressed.
And is this the type of area that you can sort of have off the peg stuff, or is it tailored to the individual, or what's the balance there?
Yeah, so we do both. So all the stock that I currently have on the website, that is, you know, anyone can buy that stock. Most of our adaptions would be zips, magnets and snappers and the Velcro. So we would have a collection that would be geared at a number of different disabilities. We also do custom orders. So they've got very popular. Customers would get in touch, and if they have a certain need or requirement, we would cater towards that need.
Would that include sort of saying, you know, if I bought, say, for instance, I wanted a rugby jersey. Mm-hmm. Could I say, right, we've got the rugby jersey. Is there a way that you can adapt it to make it easier for Greg to put on so that I can feel part of it, right?
Yeah, we actually did that last year for a very special little boy. And like that, now I sourced the jersey and adapted towards his needs. But what we can do is, if you have stuff at home, and I would encourage you, you know, customers to use what they have, you know, and try to get use of the clothes they have, and we can adapt them to their needs.
And it's not just sort of shirts or whatever. It's all types of different stuff.
All
trackies.
Types of different clothes, yeah.
You have a solution for all of it.
Yeah, so there was a collection launched last year, and it was a forest green loungewear collection. Mm-hmm. So you had your white T-shirt, you had your crew neck jumper and your joggers. And that was, you know, that's probably the most fashionable collection. But we do have, for male and female, shirts, trousers. We have skirts coming now next. And hopefully there's a few jackets coming this year and a few more designs.
And, you know, I mean, obviously, when as you're speaking and I'm thinking of examples, it could be people maybe, you know, with what quite severe needs, or if that's a correct way of grading it. I don't know. I don't want to sound cruel, but I know people know that's not my intention. But then there are people that just sort of even putting a skirt on. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? That you want to do it yourself, obviously, but maybe you can't bend down as you did or reach around as you did before. You know, the likes of the solutions that you're talking of would make a lot of people's life easier, because they want to look smart, they want to get dressed, but they don't necessarily want to go through the The merc role can be more difficult for some.
Well, I have noticed that, Greg. Now, the business is open this 2 years now, this March, and I have noticed that, excuse me, there is more needs that need to be catered for. Like arthritis is the biggest need, and it's generally male between 55 and 65. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just something I suppose we take for granted, but somebody with arthritis could really struggle with the buttons on their shirts.
For sure, yeah.
But it's just so simple. It's just changing just that little mm-hmm. area on the shirt could just make things so much easier. So the adaptions don't always necessarily have to be, you know, very difficult. Mm-hmm. It could just be tweaking a few things on each item.
But that makes so much sense.
Yeah.
It really is fiddly to get just that one example there, you know, whereas you can just clip it or whatever it might be mm-hmm. and away you go. There's a lot of important issues here in terms of independence, right? But also to how, I mean, we're all at it. It doesn't matter what your situation is. Is if you look in a mirror or have a look at yourself and you feel good, you feel confident.
Yeah.
You know, you'll see hairdressers will tell you that people going through very difficult times in their lives, getting their hair done can give them a lift or what have you. This is in that same space as well too, isn't it?
Absolutely,
you know,
yeah.
It's about making people feel included, catered for, and good about themselves.
Yeah, well, I just can't understand, Greg. And I suppose this really bothered me, you know, year on year working with people with, you know, disabilities or in the elderly care sector. You know, we have so many other ranges. You know, we have petite, we have tall, we have plus, we have maternity, but there is no adaptive range.
But the thing is you're such. Coming at this with a heart, right? The reason it's not really generally catered for is because people look at scale and production.
Absolutely.
And how much profit is there? Yeah. Can we, and they go, nah. And that's where you can step in then. I think that might, well, no, I'm not a business person, but that generally often is the barrier. They say, there's not enough money in this to do the right thing.
And I absolutely agree with that. But it's then when you have, you know, there was a girl who was designing the first collection with me when this, you know, we were still very much in the, I suppose, the trial phase of the business. And she had a great point, Greg. She said, you know, just because I have disabilities, I also work, I earn a wage, like my money is just as good. 100%. As anyone else's. Yeah. And this is the thing I think businesses are starting to realise. It is, you know, it's a huge business. And you know, people have money to spend, but there's nowhere to spend it. And they've every right to have the choice.
Do you have some examples of, stuff with you? Just something that's easy for me to not demonstrate as such. Yep. But so that's
this,
T-shirt.
Yep, this is a white T-shirt. It's a plain basic T-shirt.
It goes with everything.
Goes with everything. You have the logo here, which I don't want too much in your face, so it's very simple branding. But
Actually your own logo there as well. Oh, cool.
And you'll see here, I'll just open it up.
So I'll try and describe it as well. So the around the neck is Velcro. Mm-hmm. Simple as.
Two small tabs
around
Velcro. But what we've done with the labels here, so we've put the labels in the inside. Mm-hmm. So anybody that has any sensory needs, the label's not annoying them.
Uh-huh.
So they're all printed at the
Fantastic.
Back.
Fantastic. Another thing, if people find that thing on the back of the neck annoying. Mm-hmm. It's so simple, but it's actually a beautifully cut T-shirt as well.
I was wearing this for about 6 months before it went into production. Mm. And the whole point was I didn't want anyone to know. And so that was achieved. You know, because I didn't want it to look any different.
So that was your market test sort of a thing, right?
Kind of. Like,
but
I didn't want the adaptive clothing.
Is this though, Sarah, like anyone who's tried to get a vest or a T-shirt over a kid's head.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like ripping their ears off them.
Yeah.
Something like that there would be fantastic if it was more widely available.
Yeah, and I think unless you're in the situation that you've either worked with people who have difficulty dressing or you know family members, I suppose you're not really exposed to it, so you wouldn't really know. But then when you do see the need and how much of an impact it can have on people's lives.
Yeah.
You can see the need.
So in terms of that T-shirt too, there's a whole plethora of people. It might be physically it's easier to get on. Mm-hmm. It could be a sensory issue. Everyone's needs are different, aren't they? And that's, you know, so that could be of a benefit to people with a whole range of needs.
But even for instance, you know, if you have, you know, short-term restriction, you know, you break your collarbone, you break your shoulder, there's very little out there, you know, to bridge that until you can start wearing your other clothing again.
Well, I mean, listen, it's clearly a fantastic idea and it's clearly going well for you. Are you happy with how this is scaling for you, if you know what I mean? Or you want as many people as possible to hear about this and to benefit from this, because that's clearly what one of your key motives was, mm-hmm. was going into this. All right. So how is that part of it going for you?
So it is going very well at the minute. My biggest problem, Greg, is, I suppose, advertisement around it, because to get good advertisement, you need to put so much money into it. Yeah. And because it is such a niche area, it's like the manufacturing side of it is colossal.
Yeah.
You know, so
and you're
funding
coming
is an issue.
Really, you're coming to the point too whereby why the big boys aren't doing it.
Yeah. Yeah.
To some extent.
I think I know Tommy Hilfiger launched their first kids range in 2016 and the demand was so amazing that they then went to launch an adult range. But the problem is, because it is a niche area, it is going to be more expensive mm-hmm. with the adoption costs. Mm. And I think that puts a lot of people off. It's very different for me because this is just an adaptive business. So it's not alongside any
course.
Other items.
But that could work as an advantage to you.
I think it's
simple sell, you know, it's adaptive clothing. And in terms of, like, I mean, obviously, ideally, you'd want someone to back this as well. Maybe invest some money into the business with you. Yeah. I'm not saying, like, it feels like a bit like Dragon's Den. But funny to mention Dragon's Den or something like that there. This you could see this being actually a really successful pitch.
I hope so. I hope that, you know, I can get it to a stage that everyone has that choice. You know, we'll just say, for example, you have a granddad home and the mobility is not great. And it's, you know, like one of our best sellers would be the drop front trousers. And they were designed with falling in mind. So basically you wouldn't have to stand up and sit down too many times, that the adaptions would be incorporated to ease that. Do you know what I mean? So you would have less mobility, I suppose, but it would be easier to get the trousers on. And I think if people had the choice of getting adaptive clothing, it would just make life so much easier for families as well. Like America would be the biggest, I suppose, supplier of adaptive clothing to date, but a lot of people will say they can't access the products from America because it's so expensive.
Why shouldn't there be an Irish person
doing
it? This
is it. Everyone should be able to walk into a shop and have the choice to buy it.
And again, I just go back to the individual that actually could feel they have, you know, independence returned to them. They have style returned to them. They have, mm-hmm. you know, feeling included returned to them. Yeah. Because I would imagine too, again, you know, parents of young children, say for instance, or teens or whatever, right, that it's quite difficult to get them into traditional clothing, that they would be able to, you know, they know what they would get from seeing their young person happy mm-hmm. wearing more stylish clothing, but it's easy to get in and out of.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a million reasons why.
There's a million reasons, but I do think now over the last maybe 3 to 5 years, there is more awareness around it, Greg, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot more people are understanding the need for it.
Yeah.
So I do think other brands are going to start launching it as well, mm-hmm. which is great.
Where do people see your range, get in contact, find out more, Sarah?
Yeah, so they go on to www.adaptivefashion.ie. Mm-hmm. All the products that we have to date are on the website. And if they want to get in contact about custom products, they can just pop me an email. And all the details are on the website.
And you are Donegal based?
Donegal Town.
Okay.
Yeah.
Donegal Town, yeah. Right. Do you have a physical shop?
No, I do everything from home.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
All right.
My shed converted with all my stock.
Huh?
The shed is converted
with
all the stock.
Like, it sounds brilliant. And in terms of supports from like Leo?
And Leo were very beneficial.
Okay, that's good.
They were very beneficial. Yep. And Enterprise Ireland were very beneficial. And now in the next few weeks, I'm going to be in touch with Google regarding the prize that I won with them. So that'll be great.
Brilliant.
Because that'll, you know, a bit more advertisement and stuff.
So yeah. Hopefully. And it's just about, and as well, that even to, you know, people to be able to, with the vision and the money, to go on the journey with you as well too. Sounds fantastic. Okay. So adaptafashion.ie. Adapta, adaptafashion.ie. Adaptafashion.ie. And, I mean, it sounds fantastic. It is fantastic, clearly. You're 2 years in, Sarah. I just hope it's doing well for you already, of course. I just hope it has the success that it deserves and that you deserve.
Thank you very much.
Because, as I say, it is on so many different levels. It's really, really good. Okay, so check out adaptafashion.ie if you've worked with Sarah and used the store, let us know, and we can let others know what you think as well. But for now, Sarah Timoney, founder and owner of Adapt Fashion, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
All right, we'll be back with more. Is there anything you wanted to add, by the way?
No, that was good.
You happy enough? All right, okay. Back shortly. Yeah, check out adaptafashion.ie. It's a business that has huge potential. It's already doing really well, but huge potential for growth. And Sarah sounds like someone would be really easy to work with. And if someone went in there with a few bob, I have absolutely no doubt they'd make their money back and then some. Right, let's get to some of your comments. Hi, just wondering if you could do a birthday wish to Vivian Irwin, who is 81 today on Valentine's. Best wishes from Noel, Lorraine, Nicola, Ronan and Holly. Happy birthday, Vivian, from all of us here at Highland and the listeners as well. Another one for Vivian Irwin, wishing you a very happy birthday from Noel, Lorraine, Nicola, Ronan and Holly. More than happy to pass that on. Such a lovely story from Kevin and Gretty. Yes, indeed it was. Someone said to me, actually, and asked me the question, but I didn't have time to think about it. If you had a young one, say you had a son or daughter, 20, 23, 24, 25, whatever age it is, and they came to you and says, hey, mom, hey, dad, hey, granny, I met someone on Friday. How did the date go? Well, on Monday, he asked me to marry him or her, and I said yes. What would you say? How would you react to that? 086 60 25,000 WhatsApps and texts to that number. My husband always complained that the ladies get everything, so I got flowers sent to his work on a construction site. He never complained again. Happy Valentine's Day, Paul Rogers in Manor. That'll stiffen his cuff indeed. Okay. Always remember that if you haven't been scammed, the right scam hasn't reached you yet. Indeed. I know what you're saying. How many Facebooks are double? A lot of people get locked out and make up new accounts. How many members do they really have? There's lots of people have a stalking page as well to keep an eye on someone. Do you know what I mean? There's lots of duplicates of Facebook pages, I am absolutely sure. Hi, Greg. I'm getting loads of text messages, scams and Telegraph calls or Telegram calls. How do I stop it? I don't know how you stop it. This is why we need the mobile companies on our side. They surely have technology to filter some of this stuff out. As I said before, I don't know if it's my phone or my network, but all of the text messages go into spam. I don't see any of them unless I go into spam and read them out. Like, I could open it up now and I'm sure I've got a ton. I'm sure I've got a ton of new ones, but I never see them. And I'm glad I don't, because it would be absolutely annoying. But as I say, I don't get any of them. I don't have any scam ones there at the moment. I don't know where they go. They go into spam. Spam and block. Let's see what I got recently. Your new payee request has been completed from AIB. If you do not recognise this activity, log in to AIB-paymentsalert.com to verify your account. Hello, you know yourself. A load of unsuccessful deliveries and on it goes. Can people please put lights on in the fog? Thank you. There is a thing that people don't kind of understand. Don't understand how lights work. Daytime driving lights, fog lights and all that kind of stuff. Right, Kieran's with us now. Hi, Kieran. Good morning to you. Sorry for holding you there. How are you keeping, Kieran?
Hi, Greg.
Right, what are we talking about? Several deer on the road outside Mallon Town. Is this a common occurrence?
It is up around Cairn. But where it happened to me last night, I've been told that they'd never heard of deer on the road down towards Mallon, but I could be wrong.
Right, so you were approaching deer last night and you had to stop because there was one on the road. What happened next?
I was coming back from football training and I was heading towards Cairn, so I was coming out of Mallon Town, and there was there'd be like a lay-by on the left-hand side of the road where there's a council yard and there's a coffee van there at the weekends and a brew parks in there. So there was a car not too far in front of me, and so I had my lights were dipped. But then, so I could just up ahead, then I seen something in the road, and I wasn't expecting it really to be a deer, because never seen them there or heard of them there. And but I wasn't going that fast, because I was just coming out of the town, so I had plenty of time to I seen it, and I was nearly at a stop, because I could see the deer in front of me, so I was nearly at a stop, and next thing I heard this bang. And I thought there had been a second deer or something, or that someone else had seen the deer and swerved and hit me or something. I wasn't quite sure at the time. So I pulled in and got out of the van, and there was a deer in the road, and I didn't see another car, so someone else had stopped behind me, someone that was coming back from football as well, said that, so the deer that crossed in front of me, I'd stopped for it, but there must have been a second one following it, and it obviously jumped out and hit the side panel of my van and the sliding door.
I would have only imagined damage to a vehicle like this if it was a front impact. But this thing has put some dent in the side of your van. Must have ran straight into it, but it must have been huge. Can you imagine trying to do that with your shoulder, Kieran? And if you're out playing football, you know how to shoulder. It would be tight, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's really bad.
And is that a slide door that it's ran into as well?
Yeah, it's ran into the sliding door on the side of the van.
Right, so that's not functioning, and there's an awful dent in the side of it. But what do you do now? I mean, that's I don't know how much that would cost to fix, but we're in the grands.
I spoke to someone I know locally there that would break cars and stuff.
Yep.
And he said to source the second-hand ones. Would be really hard, you know, really hard to source one second hand, but it, you know, for the door alone, he says up to 500-700 euro, but then there's the labour.
You'll have to spray that as well,
because the door on top of it.
Yeah, that's actually quite a nice actually quite a nice paint finish you have in the van. For those watching, they'll see that. So you'll have to match that as well, which is going to cost a few bob. It's a big piece of metal.
Well, he says to get it. You'd probably have to get a new one, really. He said to get a second hand one would be hard. And he says for a new door, then it could be even more. Like, you know, you're over 1,000. So he says you're talking 1,000 to 2,000 worth of damage just on a door.
So the next question is, well, that's what insurance is for. But the insurance companies have us by the ghoulies, because there's the excess, and then there's the you're going to pay it back over the years ahead if you make a claim. You can't shop around for insurance because, the first question they ask is, have you made a claim in the last 5 years? So you're kind of damned if you do and damned if you don't, Kieran.
Yeah, so I spoke to my insurance this morning, and so they would send an assessor, and the assessor would look at it, and he said basically if it was a couple of hundred euros worth of damage, then he says, you know, you'd be better off fixing it yourself. But he says, you know, something like that's going to be upwards from claims he's processed before in the thousands.
Yeah.
So he says you would have to pay in excess of like 350, 400 euro.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously then the following year, the rest of it comes off, you know, goes against my no claims and comes out of my insurance. So I'd be paying it back.
So, what do we do about it? Because this is completely random. You know, you're just driving, doing your business, 8 p.m. last night, and a big deer runs into the side of your van. I mean, it's not like it's a cow or a sheep, maybe, or a dog. Maybe there'd be some recourse against the owner. These are just animals that are allowed to roam widely around the county.
As far as I'm aware, there's no signs on that part of the road. I know there is around Cairn where they come down from the forest or the trees there, but not down that part of the towards Mallon that I know of, anyway.
All right, have you figured out what you're going to do yet, Kieran? As I say, you're kind of damned one way or other. So either take it out of your own money now if you can scrape it together, or pay for it through the teeth with the insurance company. There's no other real recourse for you, is there? There's no other way around this.
No, probably not. No, probably I don't have a couple of thousand euro just lying around spare. So,
all right.
Have to be.
Okay, Kieran, if anyone else has any information, advice or ways around or anything, there probably isn't. But look, you've spoke to a lot of people today by coming on, and we'll see what happens. I'd say it must have been some bang. You must have known what had hit you.
It was a bit of a shock at the time. I wasn't sure. Like I said, I thought someone else had swerved and hit me.
Yeah.
You know, and I was quite lucky, because a few seconds earlier, it could have, where it hit the door, it could have came through my window. Or
well, like the head straight through the driver's window, because it looks like, I don't know if this picture's flipped. Yeah. Was it the driver's side that it hit?
Yeah, it was the driver's side.
Right. That's how it appears in the picture, but you know yourself, sometimes they're flipped. Right, okay, Kieran, if anyone's any advice or anything to add, thank you for that now. But that's obviously a young fella just going about his business. A deer runs straight into the side of the van. For the hundreds of you that are watching the show there, you'll see it is really quite a significant impact. For those listening in radio land, if you can imagine the door, you pull the handle and it slides across the side of the van. Well, it is buckled in completely. It's not, you couldn't, I'd be very surprised if you could panel beat that anyway successfully, because it's such a big piece of metal. You'd have to be very, very skilled. So it's a secondhand door, would be hard to source. A new door, spray painted, probably looking at €1,000-€2,000. If he goes down the insurance route, at least €350-€400 paying the excess, and then paying through the nose once the no claims bonus has effectively elapsed as well. All right, okay. Any help, advice or comment in relation to that situation, Kieran, has been through 086 60 25000, or give us a call on 074 91 25000. Thank you so much for keeping us so busy on the phones, the texts and every other way you're interacting with us. It's greatly appreciated. All right, our next guest joins us. If you want to see them, hop online and watch after this break. Okay, it is St. Valentine's Day today, so there is a lot of love in the air. But will there be love in the air this Thursday night on RTE2? Because I'm joined on the programme by Ireland's favourite gay, Mary Hernandez, former ATU Donegal Student Union President. I'm only feeling empowered to introduce you as such, given your social media handle. So I hope that's okay, Mary.
Not 100%. That's why I use that handle, you know, just to make sure that everyone knows that I'm Ireland's favourite gay.
Okay.
So obviously, it all started with a joke, but yeah.
Hey, well, you know what? Embrace it. If it's a good joke, just embrace it. Former ATU Donegal Student Union President, what was your time up here like, Mary?
Oh, it was amazing. I actually lived in Letterkenny for 6 years. I did my law degree, and then I just decided to run for the student union elections. I first was the vice president of Welfare and Equality, and then I was president. And it was one of the most special times ever. Like, I still look back and I'm like, Donegal to this day, to me, it's my home. That's where I grew from, like, a young adult to a proper adult. And the support that I always had in Donegal has been amazing.
So, we're speaking in the context of it being Valentine's Day, of course, and you being on First Dates. I like First Dates. I find it a programme that I don't tune into religiously, Mary, but if I need my spirits lifted, because in every episode, you know, in every episode, there's a couple of nice stories in there. And just the idea of two strangers meeting and hitting it off in that time of their lives, it gives me a wee lift. And that's why I watch it. But I'll ask you in a moment as to why you decided to take part in the show. But, like, is dating tough in its traditional senses, and traditional sense nowadays in so many different ways? I mean, traditional outside of going on a dating show, if you know what I mean. Is it tough?
It's so tough. Like, being queer in Ireland and dating is just impossible, because obviously it's such a small, like, country. But most of the gay clubs are either in Cork or in Dublin. So if you think about it, imagine being gay in Donegal. It's like, where can I go to actually find queer people? And it's just like, okay, I have to get a 4-hour bus to actually go to a safe space where I can be myself and meet other people. So just imagine the queer dating scene. It's just ridiculous. So that's why I was just so happy when I found out that I was going to First Dates, because I was like, oh, they'll find a person for me that is also part of the community.
I understand Jennifer Lawrence is your type. Did you find your Jennifer Lawrence in the hills of Donegal?
In the hills of Donegal, no, I did not find, unfortunately, Jennifer Lawrence or someone that looked like Jennifer Lawrence in Donegal. But yes, I did meet a lot of nice girls in Donegal. I used to always say A Donegal girl is always going to be in my top list because they're absolutely amazing.
Yeah, well, maybe it's going to be a Kildare girl. The one thing I've noticed, even on the British version of the show, is that often when LGBTQ plus people go on the show, it's kind of a relatively small community, and a lot of interaction and dating is done online. So even in, you know, a population of 60 mil, I have watched shows whereby they have come across each other or they recognise each other. Had you come across your date Boo at all prior to meeting on the show?
No, never, never. That's why I was so amazed about the work that First Dates Ireland brings, because they really do make sure that you don't know the person and that you don't have any connections. I don't know how they do it, but they did it, and I did never see Boo before in my life.
And was it, I was going to say out of desperation, but I don't mean it like that, but I hope you understand what I mean. What was your motive? That sounds terrible. But I suppose as a social media person, right, okay, there's an advantage in going on telly as well, because it's brand Ireland's favourite gay as well. So there's benefits for that. But I mean, do you feel that you needed this? Like, in other words, traditional dating wasn't working and you genuinely wanted to find love? Or was it stuff it, I want to try it, it's a bit of crack, and you know what? It gets the name out there as well. So what was your motivation going into this?
This is actually so interesting, because obviously the date happened before I actually blew up on social
media. Oh, really? Okay, brilliant.
So I actually only gained nearly 90,000 followers in the space of 5 months on Instagram. So I'm just blowing up, and I was just like, oh my God, if I knew that this was going to happen, I probably wouldn't have maybe like applied, because I now would have got questions like that, you know, it's like, oh, you just wanted maybe for your name then to be more like.
But there's no shame in that game. I don't think there's any problem with that. I wouldn't.
Oh, no, absolutely. Yeah. But like, you know, I generally went to First Dates Ireland because my love life was absolutely horrible. Like, I just kept getting cheated on. I was just like, this is horrible. And then my twin sister, like, she was like, she was watching me cry, and I was like, I just cannot do love anymore. I'm going to turn 27. I live with my dog. I'm literally a representation of like loneliness. And then my twin sister was like, Mary, look, I'm going to write your name for First Dates Ireland. I was like, Vanessa, please don't. And she's like, Mary, let's just do it. There's nothing to lose. It cannot get any worse, your love life. I was like, you know what? You're absolutely right. So she signed me up. She helped me with the whole process. And then I ended up like getting a date in First Dates Ireland. But it all started because my love life really generally could not go any worse, because I just kept getting cheated on everywhere. So yeah.
And the thing about it too is, listen, we can watch and see how you and Boo get on, but I mean, obviously, you know, one of the criteria is that, you know, you want a faithful relationship. So you knew going into your date that you were going to get that. Now if it sparks after that, all well and good, but it filters out an awful lot of the noise, doesn't it, in terms of the type of person that you want?
Yes, absolutely. Like, The main requirement, I was like, blonde, blue eyes, nice smile, they want to have the crack, and please that they are loyal. Like, you know, I feel like loyalty is so hard to find nowadays. And sometimes that happened a lot in the queer community, because it's such a small community. Cheating sometimes can happen more often, as opposed to the straight relationships. But yeah, no, to me it was just all loyalty, please.
You know, I haven't seen the program, but obviously, you know, as part of it, part of the format is, you know, we want to learn a bit about you and your experiences.
Yeah.
And I can imagine, you know, you're a very attractive woman, and I'm sure attractive to all sexes, right? So you probably had to explain to an awful lot of people that you're gay, yeah, right? But also to in terms of, you know, finding your place, finding people to be around, being seen for who you are. I imagine to get to where you are now, you know, it's been a tough old journey for you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I did an article with Independent, and it came out yesterday, and the amount of hate comments, I was like, oh my God, please somebody hide me under the rock. And I was just kind of like scared for once, because I have always been so proud of who I am, and you know.
So you're sorry, just because this is actually really quite important. So and you've said it, but I want to be clear. You did an article with the Irish Independent that was broadcast on Tuesday, and obviously people start commenting on that in social media. you've kind of gone backwards, do you feel, in terms of your confidence and happiness off the back of those comments? You do, can I just say one thing, though, and I know you know this, and I don't want this to sound patronising, that is not reflective of people. That is people who mostly are anonymous, mostly are unhappy in their lives, mostly that they derive pleasure. Can you imagine deriving pleasure from hurting another person? You know, I hope you don't give them the spot. Yeah. I hope you don't give them that what they crave. They want to upset you, but they are not reflective of the overwhelming majority of people, be it in this country or any country for that matter.
No, thank you so much, Greg. Like it means a lot. Like actually yesterday, I had a lot of people then supporting me because obviously they saw the hate comments, and I had a content creator called Alan Clark. Like he literally was like messaging me and saying, "Mary, they are just very, very unhappy with their lives. Don't you worry about it." And whenever I started even getting the emails, I was like, "Would you like to come on the radio? Or would you like to come to a TV show tomorrow?" I literally just wanted to say no. Mm. I wanted to still hide and be like, "No, like this is not for me." And then I just thought, "What about the people who are still in the closet and are seeing all these hate comments that I'm getting?" They probably, whenever they see that, they're like, "Oh my God, Mary's getting them hate comments. I just genuinely don't want to come out." So I'm actually out here today, and I'm going to be hopefully in the next few weeks more out there as well, just to prove people to please to not be scared that you might get hate comments, but I'm here for you to be that representation.
But the majority of families, the majority of people listening to this program in the northwest of Ireland have someone who they love very much dearly, that is gay, lesbian, whatever it might be. You know what I mean? And there's very few families or people listening to this that don't have a grandchild, a nephew, a niece that they love. You know what I mean? And support. That is the reality. The only thing I want for you is to be happy. I don't particularly mind whom it's with, if you know what I mean. But I have to get my own stuff in order. I have enough to deal with. And this is, and when I say me, I'm sort of speaking as me, as us all, as individuals. I have enough to keep my ducks in a row, to keep myself happy, to keep myself sane, you know, to start worrying about you or to try and hurt you. You know what I mean? Yeah. And that's the majority of people out there. We all have our own stuff to do. And we need to stop fascinating over what other people are doing. Anyway, I don't want to ruin the fun. Can I ask, did you and Boo go on a second date? Or I don't know what the story is. Do you want to ruin it? Should we just leave it as a surprise?
You're going to have to see tomorrow.
Well, that's boring.
I know, right?
Okay, well, listen.
You can ring me after.
All right, okay.
The show, you can ring me after and then we can analyse.
Well, listen, come here. I hope it all went well for you. I wish you nothing but happiness. And thank you very much for joining us on the programme today.
Thank you so much, Greg.
All right, take care of yourself. Bye-bye. That is, see you, Mary. That's Mary Hernandez, who's a former ATU Donegal Student Union president, taking part, talking about her experience in first dates. It's on tomorrow night, Thursday night, I beg your pardon, which is tomorrow night, would you believe, on RTE2. And there you go. I know some people are going to be triggered listening to that, and I get you. I just don't have the space to, brain space to sort of, as long as people are happy and whatever they're doing, that's good. That's what I really need. I find it hard to find love. I think first dates would be perfect for me. Yeah, indeed. What about, you know, someone's bound to come up with a local first date. I know there's matchmaking competitions or something, but wouldn't it be fun? A sort of like a first dates sort of an event in a hotel in around Letterkenny or Donegal Town or the Inishowen Gateway or out in Dunlow or something, whereby it's just a lovely space where people enter and single, mix up, have a few drinks, fall in love, all that kind of stuff. Hi, Greg. I met my wonderful husband, James Cullen, on Friday the 13th of September, 2013. We got married on the 13th of January. So lucky 13 for us. That comes in from Mary. And they've 13 kids. No, they don't. James and Mary, congratulations to you. A very special couple, obviously, with 13 featuring really strongly in their lives in a really positive way. A listener earlier on, I think we all sympathise with him, side of the van hit by a deer. You know, it wasn't even a frontal impact. The deer literally ran into the side of his van, causing thousands of euro in damage. Andy joins us. Hi, Andy.
Hi, how's it going?
I'm doing good. I think it's kind of accepted, isn't it, that we're going to have to control our deer population, and then the debate will be, well, how do we do it? What say you?
Well, I think they do need to be controlled, and I think it'd be nice if venison was promoted more and it made its way into the more mainstream food chain, mm-hmm. you know, or maybe that meat could be used for dog food, cat food, something along those lines, you know?
It is an interesting conversation and one that probably should be had alongside the conversation that's been happening now about how we control the population. Because I think there was a study or a report out or views being seen as to how we control the deer population. Remarkably, Andy, we don't actually know the deer population. We've never really done a census. I don't know if that's work that is ongoing, but certainly this is some valuable, worthwhile meat that could find its way into the either the human or animal food chain.
Well, it is, and as we know, deer have no natural predator anymore, and there is call to reintroduce wolves, but I think that's a different conversation altogether. But you know, they do massive amounts of damage, and if they're let breed, then they are going to increase in numbers, and farmers' crops are going to be affected, forests. You know, there's lots of knock-on effects to having such a big deer population, and it's delicious meat. And don't get me wrong, I absolutely love deer. I think they're magnificent animals, and I think every part of that animal could be utilised in some way. Even if it's just the antlers for dog chews, you know, that kind of way.
And I think the idea of the meat being used makes it more palatable for those who perhaps are wobbling or are uncertain about a cull. Do you know what I mean? If there is some process that follows Absolutely. The culling, I think it makes it more palatable perhaps for some people.
Absolutely. Look, I think it could be an excellent business for somebody. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Wild Donegal meat, wild Donegal venison coming from the hills of Donegal, market it. You know, there's venison in Aldi's and Lidl's these days.
Mm.
It's probably as good as beef. It can be used in any way that beef could be used, possibly lamb as well. Baron's Court in Tyrone, very close to us, has a thriving business selling the venison that's taken from their estate. So, you know, somebody could do it.
What's it taste like, Andy?
Look, it's beautiful. It is it's stronger than beef. It has a taste of its own. A lot of people get put off because they've had venison that is strong. It's been probably killed in a stressful way, which puts adrenaline through the meat and it alters the taste of it. But if the thing is harvested correctly and humanely and as quickly and as professionally as possible, it's a delicious meat.
What way do you think we should be culling them? What do you think of this giving people, you know, opening, you know, a culling season and people go out? There's an element of sport to it. I mean, is that not a bit archaic a way of doing it? Do we not need to sort of round them up and dispense with them, if you're into that, like cattle or sheep, rather than sort of shooting them as they run across a field?
That's a real tough and big debate, you know.
Yeah.
But look, anybody who has a rifle is obviously should be, you know, trained and licensed to have one.
Mm.
It shouldn't be just an indiscriminate thing. There should be a select amount of trained, experienced hunters who do that kind of thing. And there are those people in Donegal, those people do live here.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, for sure. All right, okay. Andy, as I say, the wolves thing. Listen, back in the day where most of Ireland was covered by trees and all that type of stuff, we have displaced wolves permanently in this country. There's no scenario whilst we live here that they could ever return. So it is coming down to an organised cull. And as you say, don't waste the meat, either dog food, the food chain, you know, chewing bones, whatever it might be. Okay, Andy, thank you very much for that. And I also understand that there are people out there that even the casual sort of talk of killing deer, they would find that upsetting. Apologies if you do. But Teresa Dealey's on Facebook. I just love venison. I've tried venison a couple of times going back and I found it very metally. And I tried it with different sauces, without sauces. Actually, I'll tell you where I had it. And it was the only time I was ever there, back a long time ago, McNean's Bistro. But anyway, back in the day. All right. I, for one, says this listener, love hunting and managing deer numbers and keeping a healthy population. It should be welcomed. People coming hunting and doing it for free, not chasing them or making them feel like criminals. A caller says it wouldn't matter tuppence. So it wouldn't matter tuppence if Ireland boycotted Israel. It's all about what the big countries want. We could march from Donegal to Cork and still nothing would change. Yeah, I suppose. But maybe we'd feel we're on the right side of history because this will be written about in years to come. There's a video on YouTube with a link to click on it. The video claims to know how Ryan Tubridy made $250,000 and to click on the link to obtain money. I think we all know how you made that money. But anyway, there's a link then that will ask you for your bank details. Why is YouTube allowing this if it's illegal? Immediate... okay, they go straight into it. I don't know. Facebook seems to be free-for-all in terms of ads and scams at the moment. I don't know what the story is. Twitter's the same now, or X. They're all at it. I was in a similar incident to Kieran. That's the fellow whose van was hit by a deer. I claimed $1,300 off my own insurance to pay for the damage. When I renewed my insurance, it was double the price. I used to pay $400. It went up to $960. I'd be better off paying it out of my own pocket. Cheaper maybe to try and get a credit union loan or something. Okay. Listen, I know I was only away for a couple of days, but great to be back. Thank you so much for all the love, all the comments, all the texts, everything. Just listening. We really do appreciate it. Thank you so very much indeed. We're back with you to do it all again tomorrow morning from 9. Have a wonderful Valentine's Day. I hope you are treated like the king or queen that you are. And if you're on your own, happy with a bag of popcorn and a film, feet up, no one telling you not to do a bang bang or whatever it might be. But come here, enjoy your day if you can, however you do so. Back tomorrow morning at 9.